Big ol' Marcus.
Oh, dude.
Big ol' Marcus.
Right here.
Welcome back to the Native Voice Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Ellis.
I'm your co-host, Christian Miller.
And today, we're going to give you all a little recap of our weekend in Rockport.
Yeah, so pretty much we're going to go over all the fish that we've caught, the places we went, the guys that we met, kind of just a little overview of everything that we did and how our weekend went. We went with Willie, Richard's dad. Obviously, Richard went as well. So we'll kind of just go through a little bit of what we learned and some things that we knew was already previously to be in there. So that way we can kind of just give y'all a little understanding of as much as we understand of how it went, you know.
Yeah, a little insight into some coastal fishing. You know, we're no experts. The guy we went with, I guess you could say, is closer to an expert, more, you know, he's a professional, he's a guide. But we're going to talk a little bit about the fishing, about the weather that we encountered, just overshot of the whole thing, start to finish. You know, if you're an inexperienced coastal fisherman like we are, kind of tell y'all, you know, the trials and tribulations of that, and mainly, you know, having some confidence when you go down there. We're going to talk a little bit about some coastal relics found with some guys.
Smokers.
Yeah, some real smokers. So, you know, glad y'all are here, and we're going to get into it. So to start out, you know, it's been a very wet year. We scheduled this probably, 2 months ago now?
Yeah, it's been in the works for at least a couple months now. I mean, I think that it's always been a plan for a while, and you know, just the right opportunity kind of came about, and we saw it, and we ran with it, and you know, we're here now. We're past the trip. We just got back, not even an hour ago, doing this podcast to keep it fresh on our minds, so y'all really hear exactly what happened and kind of what we experienced throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, we you know, sunburnt, salt dried. Like a piece of jerky.
Yeah, leather skinned.
Pretty tired, but, you know, trying to bring you all the most relevant content we can. So, yeah, like Christian said, you know, we've had this set up for about 2 months. Can't control the weather, though. Booked the hotel probably a month ago. And come the start of the week, coordinating with the guide, looking at the weather in Rockport and at the weather here locally, and was not looking too hot for us.
Right, yeah. It just wasn't adding up. I looked at it earlier in the week. I think it was like probably Sunday, which is, you know, 5 days before we were supposed to go on Friday. I looked at it and I was like, "You see the weather?" And Richard's like, "Yeah, I seen it." I'm like, "Well, hopefully it changes." And, you know, we'll kind of get to that here in a little bit of exactly how it panned out. But it definitely wasn't looking the most hopeful for somebody planning a month in advance, no refund. You know, you're like, we're going to go regardless.
Yeah.
Going to see how it goes and, you know, kind of go from there. And, you know, we ended up being successful. So that's always a plus.
Yeah.
But Richard will keep explaining what he's talking about here.
Yeah. So, you know, looking at the weather leading up throughout the week, I think they were scheduled to get like probably close to 10 inches of rain this week and just every day hammered with storms. Plus, you know, 2 weeks ago on the back end of Hurricane Beryl, we're dealing with that, which, you know, kind of had us not so hopeful about the trip to begin with. We're not sure what kind of damage is going to come from that. Anyway, then come this Sunday, looking at everything, rain in the forecast Monday through Sunday. I'm coordinating back and forth with the guide. Hey, how's everything look? Not very hopeful. Y'all might want to come. He literally told me y'all might come Monday through Wednesday of the following week, but you know, we got 9-to-5 jobs every day that we got to work, so that didn't really line up.
Sometimes longer than that, but
yeah, working those extra hours Christian gets in. But anyway, we kind of just figured we'd stick it out, make the hike down here, and see what happens.
Yeah, so pretty much start off. I think we left. I don't remember what time we left on Friday. It was probably around 11 o'clock in the morning. So we get in the truck. We know we're in Killeen. It's about 4 hours away to the hotel. We get in there. We went pick up Willie, and we take off down the road. You know, we're sitting there trekking down the road, listening to a podcast. We're listening to the one with what's his name, Charles?
Charles Beatty, the Prince of Poachers.
Yeah, we're sitting there just listening to that podcast, a couple of them that he had been on, and, you know, we're just cutting up the whole time, just having a good time, listening to podcasts, music, you know.
Yeah, beautiful weather, you know, looking good until we hit a little east of San Antonio, and then just freaking downpoured on us.
Yes, it starts hammering down on us, and, you know, we're still hopeful. We're not even down in the dumps. We're just taking a vacation at minimum with the, you know, with the guys weekend. It doesn't happen very often, but when it does, you know, we make it worthwhile regardless. Either way, so we're going down there. We get to the hotel. We check in, you know, get everything in the room, and I don't even think it was probably 5 minutes. We were sitting down in the room. We're like, want to go fishing? Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I want to go fishing. Let's go. So we look up a local, it was a pier, and it was right next to a bait shop. So we're like, well, we're going to go to this bait shop. We'll check out this pier and see if it's worthwhile while we're over there. We pull up, we get about 40 shrimp half dead, you know, and look over at the pier, and it's like in a foot of water. And we're like, probably not the most ideal. But, you know, then again, I'm used to fishing a little bit deeper water, catching fish anyways. So seeing a foot of water, you're like, it's pretty hot for a foot of water to be catching fish. So, you know, maybe they're not there, maybe they are. So we had to figure it out. So we hop on Google Maps, and me and Richard found some stuff. He can kind of tell you what we found. And
yeah, so, you know, we're not, like I said at the start, we don't do much coastal fishing. I mean, this might be, in total, my fourth trip down there. And, you know, we're going on a guided trip on Saturday, so not really with the intent to take a boat down there or anything and really get out in the bay. So we pull up Google Maps, and we kind of start looking at the layout of the land. Christian pulls up some research pages, like some little local forums and stuff, and starts looking into what those people are saying. We're kind of navigating the bay. That bay that we were in on Friday, it was close to Aransas Pass. I'm not exactly sure
right
what
when
the bay
you go is. Over the bridge to Port Aransas, we were pretty much right over there.
Yeah.
Right behind a little, I think it was a hatchery or something.
Yeah, there's a local hatchery there. Anyway, we started looking at the layout of the land and noticing a lot of cuts and kind of a deeper channel that ran into this portion of the bay that you could pretty well get to from the bank. So we pulled down there, and, you know, my experience just kind of winging it at the coast has not ever been very good. Right.
Yeah,
I mean,
same.
Yeah, we went down there when I was a kid a lot, and we'd catch specks and, you know, a bunch of, not that specks are trash fish, but a bunch of trash fish alongside the specks, occasional sharks. But so, you know, to get out there and actually catch some fish that we were targeting, we really kind of went down there with the mindset to catch specks and redfish. And we were able to get on some Friday night just on our own, just doing a little bit of research, kind of coordinating as far as topographical areas in the bay, looking for different sandbars that were off the channels, different cuts. And
Yeah, so we went to that one spot first with that little hatchery in the front of it. The backside was the beach. So we went there. We had, you know, like I said, fresh live shrimp that we had used. And I think it wasn't even the first or second cast I threw it out there, and I had something smack it. I couldn't really tell what it was by just the hit. So I reel it in, and sure enough, my shrimp was gone. I was like, well, dang. Threw it out there again and got another hit. Kept reeling it in. I was like, dadgum, something keeps stealing my bait. I don't know what it is. So I get, you know, I start cutting the shrimp up into little pieces. I give me a little hook, and I threw it out there. And, you know, sure enough, this time he didn't get away with it. I caught him, and there were a bunch of little piggy perch that were just snacking my shrimp off the whole entire time. So I think we had gone through a few of those, and I think we caught a couple croaker over there as well.
Yeah, and we caught did we catch a little red over there?
Oh, yeah, I caught a little red fish at that spot.
I think that was what we first got into, was a little red or a couple of little reds. I don't remember.
Yeah, I caught a little red, and I was like, well, you know, there's fish over here.
Yeah.
You know, but I think we stayed there probably like an hour, maybe max.
Yeah.
Messed around with all those smaller fish for a little bit.
Yeah, we'd kind of gone down there with intent to night fish, so we took some lanterns and stuff, and the spot wasn't really set up for us to night fish too well. So, you know, we're just yanking out little bait fish, and like I said, a couple of small redfish. But then again, we kind of sat there for a little bit, started to get a little bit dark, And we're like, you know, let's go grab some food, and we'll kind of regroup and go find a spot to night fish. But that being said, I kind of want to talk about what we were using, because, you know, in our situation, like I said, we're not very familiar with coastal fishing. We just kind of went off a whim, kind of some stuff that my dad knew and some stuff that we had kind of looked into.
Like, I think I had only gone bay fishing, so to speak, maybe 2 times total in my life. And I just used the little bit of experience I got from those guys to kind of try to figure it out on the fly. I mean, we got down there at, I don't know, 5 o'clock, and we already had a line in the water by 6 o'clock. And by that time, it was only 2.5 hours of fish until dark, but we had planned to stay out and as long as we could.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, like I said, about the time we decided to kind of regroup and go night fish, we had some rain moving in too. But back to the gear thing, we were running, I think I had 12 pound monofilament, like I would if I'm bass fishing or something. And then, what do you call it? A popper?
Yeah. We just had those little, cork poppers that we had tied on that I knew that we'd used with some, I was using a jig head with those Gulp Alive shrimp, the little 3-inch shrimp, the little chartreuse and pearl. I was trying to use that just to try to catch them. I think that's what I cut that little redfish on.
Yeah.
And then I started trying to use live bait just to see if there was something else bigger out there. But that was mainly what I was using for the most part.
But so, yeah, I mean, we pretty much all kind of had a similar setup as far as line, the rigging, leads, or leaders, whatever you want to call them. And then the bait, we kind of were all throwing something different, just trying to see what was getting bit, which we were all catching fish.
I mean, it's trial and error when you've only done it a few times.
Yeah.
You're looking at everything like, I bet a fish is going to eat this. I bet they eat on this. So I found a little hermit crab on the beach, and I smacked it open with a rock, you know, grabbed it out. It looked like a little crawdad with no tail on it, shell.
How'd that go?
Well, I mean, those piggy perch ate it, but that's about it, I think. I only tried it one time.
Yeah. But we threw some of them piggy perch in our bucket and our couple of the croaker we caught.
Mm-hmm.
Gathered up our stuff, and we went back to the truck, kind of caught the tail, the start of the storm. Started raining on us again. We're sitting there looking at the map, and we actually decided to go into Aransas Pass, where the Gulf meets the pass, and set up there to do some night fishing. And I think we got set up, and I mean, I think Dad casted first, and just
probably wasn't even within 10 minutes here. I'd already caught a speck.
Yeah. Yeah, just floating, at this point, dead shrimp that were, funny story too. The bait shop's down there. Everybody's going to tell you their bait's fresh, good. It's the end of the day. I'm assuming the stuff was caught in the morning.
Yeah.
Shrimp die pretty quick. Even if they tell you they're pretty hard to kill, they're not.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the ones we got fresh in the morning, yesterday, they were kicking and they were trying to get away.
Yeah, very lively. Yeah, totally, totally different. But we're in a different location too. Maybe a more reputable bait shop. I don't know.
Right.
That being said, though, it doesn't matter down there from what I could tell, and you know, my past experiences. I think certain fish prefer live shrimp, but most of those fish, it seems like, will smack on dead shrimp. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. I mean, you'll catch. You don't know what you're catching. That's a kind of cool thing going from freshwater to saltwater. Is you throw something that's a bait fish or, you know, a food resource out in the water, you don't know what's going to eat it because everything eats everything out there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we'll get into what we caught on the boat later on with Dylan, but, you know, what we caught over there off that channel with the jetty, I think that we had caught a bunch of hardhead and, like I said, some trout, a couple small reds. I think some croaker, but I think that was pretty much what we mainly were getting into. Nothing crazy to really brag on. It's just, you know, we pull up and we started catching fish and we were happy about it. Didn't matter if they were, you know, monsters or not. We're just fishing.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said again too, so just floating at this point, we're just floating dead shrimp on corks. Mm-hmm. I mean, just right off the jetty, maybe 10, 15 feet off, not even in the main channel.
Yeah. At that point they were coming out of those shallows up to feed and coming in to feed. Most of those bait fish were getting pushed in there, so, you know, they were feeding, but like I said, nothing to really brag about, but
still fish.
We dang sure found the fish. You know, we found the bait fish and we found the fish. So
yeah, definitely
that's all I can really ask for.
Definitely better than I've done in the past, just fishing from jetties and stuff. I mean, successful, I would say. And it seemed to, like I said, we're not super familiar with this coastal stuff, but it seems the time of year that maybe the reds are, I'm assuming, maybe still out in a little deeper water, but the younger fry are maybe kind of coming up. So that's what we were catching. And, you know, a lot of reds that were right there close to legal, like 17, 18 inches, but just under that 20-inch mark.
Right.
The kind of the same with the trout, too. It seemed like the trout were all right there at the, mm-hmm. you know, barely legal mark to a little under. So I'm assuming younger, fresher spawn.
Yeah, once those waters start cooling down, from what I understand, you know, those fish start pushing in more and start getting a little more active. I mean, I think that he had said October was probably the better time to come back out. And that's, you know, fall, which over there it's probably still, you know, 70 degrees outside in October. Probably a little warmer than that on the coast there, but either way. So we got done fishing at the jetties. I mean, it was starting to rain on us and we were tired. You know, we've been in the truck all day. We were fishing all day pretty much for 4 or 5 hours. So we were like, well, I'm about tired. It's time to go. And it was about 11 o'clock at night, you know. And we were like, well, you hungry? We're like, yeah, we're hungry. So we went in Sonic and we got ourselves chili cheese dog and a burger.
And some burnt tater tots.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever had some grease that dirty in my life.
Bottom of the barrel tater tots.
I mean, it was, they were like acidic.
Yeah, not good. And we'd kind of worked up a plan with the guide. He was going to get up. We were all going to get up around 5:30, 6 o'clock because we had what was supposedly 90% chance of rain the next morning with thunderstorms all day. So we kind of wanted to map out the day, take a look at what the storms were going to do, and then get our plan together as to how to approach the day. So sure enough, we get to the hotel. Everybody goes to sleep. Well, watched the Olympics for a little bit, made some jokes. And then everybody kind of cut out, went to sleep. Wake up at 5:30 to a text from the guide. He's saying, sends me a picture of the radar, and it was just solid red over.
Yeah, it was pouring.
Yeah.
I think that we woke up all at the same time. We thought the AC was going, but we were just getting pelted up on the window of the hotel room by rain.
Yeah, just smashing us.
Yeah, there's like very little hope in that situation. But over there on the coast, it's like those storms, they just pop up and they're kind of gone. You know, you can literally see the storm cells. They're just little sails, but sometimes they'll be big, and you can actually just see them and work around them sometimes when you're fishing, and even when you're just driving around. You'll hit a patch of just dry land, and then all of a sudden it'll be soaking wet.
Yeah.
Like, they just come in there, bursts of, like, a couple hours and leave. It's not like it is here.
Yeah. But, so, the guy did text me, showing me what the storms look like. I pull up my weather app. We kind of start talking, and had made up a plan to, looks like the storms would clear by about 9:30, between 9:30 and 11.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd kind of planned that we'd meet up about 11:30 at the dock and just go get straight on him. He would have bait and everything ready. And for those of y'all that don't know how a guided trip works, we'll kind of explain that throughout this process and then, or throughout our trip, and then kind of recap it at the end too. That way y'all know not just our perspective, but the guide's perspective too. We were hopeful that he would be onto this episode with us. But he had some unseen circumstances come up,
right,
and he couldn't be a part of this one, but we will have him on in the future. That being said, you know, we kind of worked up a plan, and so we get up, we go to the hotel breakfast, and man.
Yeah, it was chaotic. I mean, you got a bunch of kids in there and, you know, a bunch of parents, because back to school pretty soon, you know, right now it's, you know, July 26th, 27th. I don't even know what date it is. But
yeah.
Either way, you know, kids are going back to school soon, so everybody's trying to get their fill at the beach.
Yeah.
And they were in there for sure.
Buffet bandits, baby. That's what we'll call them.
Yeah, just toast stealing sons of guns.
But, yeah, that's kind of irrelevant. So anyway, we go get our breakfast. We kind of get geared up. We get the call from Dylan about 10:30 to head to Rockport. And from where we were staying to Rockport, it was about a 45-minute drive, not counting the rain.
Yeah, or the drivers.
Yeah, or the reckless drivers in Corpus. Flash-flooded roads. I mean, it was not ideal at all. Like I said, at the start of the week, it was projected that there, I think it was around 10 inches of rain is what they had projected down there. But, you know, we'd kind of been watching it all week and hoping for that break like we talked about. And anyway, the way things shaped up Saturday that we actually got that break, we get to Rockport about 11 and we meet Dylan at the dock right next to a pretty cool thing for us, mm-hmm. right next to a whooping crane sanctuary, I guess is what it would be.
Yeah,
conservation land. So while we're waiting on him to grab bait and stuff, we're sitting there. I always carry a pair of binoculars in the truck and we're bird watching, which isn't something we regularly do, but being avid outdoorsmen and especially avid bird hunters, it was kind of cool to sit there and watch these birds. We even got to see, it's either a black duck or a mottled duck kind of work and land out there. So that was cool. That's the first one of those I've ever seen.
Yeah, there's definitely quite a few birds out there. I mean, it was nice to sit in the truck and, you know, get a little break before we were about to go out and tear ourselves up out in the water, you know, just getting beat by the sun and catching fish. And about that time, I mean, it probably wasn't even 30 minutes before he showed up. The rain let up and the clouds started clearing through. You're like, man, it's going to be a good day. You know, it's kind of like God was ready for us to fish.
Yeah.
And we were ready to fish. So
yeah,
it's kind of
a
thing. And, you know, we show up, he shows up and we launch the bow. We hop on. I mean, he's ready to go too. He's already got the boat and drive by the time that we jumping on and we go through out of the channel and, you know, head straight for the first spot.
Yeah. And so to kind of backtrack a little, like we've been talking about the projected rain, we get on the boat and we're cutting through the channel with him. And he's like, man, he's like, this is the first time I've got to go out in probably, what did he say, a week and a half?
Yeah, I think he had a bunch of stuff going on, you know.
Yeah, between
personal stuff going on. So he wasn't really able to go out. And when he got out, he was ready.
Yeah, he was wound up, ready to go. And like we had said, you know, they'd projected like 10 inches of rain down there. And sure enough, they'd just in the past day and a half gotten 8 inches alone.
Mm-hmm.
That may have been a good thing for us because according to the guide, you know, the fishing hasn't been just terribly hot down there. I guess warmer weather and the fluctuating storms and stuff have kind of kept mm-hmm. the fish maybe not patternable,
right.
Maybe be a good way to say it.
So, I mean, pretty much just at least from what I picked up, the rain had a lot to do with the temperature of the water. And whenever that water starts going down, then the fish start rambling up. And it's pushing bait fish from the floodwaters coming out from different channels and areas, pushing them out. So we were kind of trying to key in on those areas specifically where those bait fish might be pushing out or, you know, trying to go in.
Yeah. And so, you know, the whole goal was to target, I mean, we just wanted to really catch fish, but we were trying to target reds and specks. So we go out with some live shrimp, or Dylan had live shrimp for us. We cut across the bay, and he's got a spot he fishes near a reef where a couple of, I guess, creeks kind of tie into the bay.
Yep.
So you've got water, I'm assuming fresh water from these creeks pouring into the bay, making like a brackish water right around this reef.
Mm-hmm.
So tons of bait fish. I mean, we pull up to this little flat, and there's just bait fish jumping everywhere.
Yeah. There's mullet and skipjack and all sorts of stuff just busting on top of the water, coming up out of the water, and it's kind of one of those deals where you're like, yeah, there's probably going to be a good little day right here.
Yeah. Yeah. The current was blowing into us clearly. And we set up, I guess it would have been the southwest side of this reef, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah.
And rig up and we just start tossing to the point of this reef. So we kind of, since we had three guys fishing, we had one guy tossed to kind of the deeper portion of the bay off the point of the reef. Somebody cast to the exact point of the reef, and then someone just inside the cut on mm-hmm. the reef.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I think it was no sooner than the first line hit the water, we had already hooked up on a pretty good drum.
Yep. Yeah, we were tearing up a bunch of drum. I mean, that's the majority of what we pulled in that was, you know, able to be kept. We pulled in a handful of reds, handful of specks, you know, some ladyfish, and I mean, we even had a gar that we pulled in, an alligator gar. It was about, I don't know, what'd you say, about 3.5 foot long or so?
Yeah, he was definitely probably 3.5 foot long. we caught him. Dylan had cast out just a line to sit on the bottom. We were, again, kind of running the same stuff we'd ran the night before, mm-hmm. Unknowingly. Cork deal with a lead, and then a live shrimp that we were, well, I guess they weren't live when we put them on the hook. We were piecing out these shrimp into three pieces and just throwing heads, midsections, and then the tails. But Dylan had set out a line on the bottom with a cut skipjack we had caught,
mm-hmm.
and it had been out there maybe 15 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, so I was on the front of the deck on the boat, and I looked out and I'd seen it. At first, I really didn't know what it was. You know, I'm out in the middle of the friggin' bay, not thinking that there'd be gar out there, which I kind of knew that they were could live in brackish water, but you're not really looking for a gar when you're on the coast, at least not me.
Yeah.
So I had seen it, and I didn't know what it was. I just told him, I was like, hey, there's a big old fish that just came up top. And he was like, where at? So I told him, I pointed, and he threw the bait out there, and I don't even think it was 5 minutes. That gar sniffed that bait out, and he was on.
Yeah, he just started peel and drag. And Dylan honestly thought it was a triple tail, just floating, because... And we'll
kind of explanation of what I said, it would have made sense for it to be that. And, you know, like I said, I didn't even know what I was looking at. So I just gave him the best description as I could. And he was got all hyped up.
Yeah.
You know, thinking it was a triple tail. And I was like, yeah, I don't know. Maybe it was a triple tail. Maybe it wasn't. I couldn't really get a good look at it. I saw it for about less than a second.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'll talk about the triple tail in a minute, too. But, yeah, I mean, this thing, it starts just pull and drag. And I get on the pole. Start reeling, and I mean he honestly was kind of running right at me, so got him in pretty quick. He didn't fight a whole lot.
Yeah, and that's but, another thing too, I noticed all those fish over there, it seems like when you hook them they just start running toward you.
Yeah, the technique down there was very different, and like I said, I've fished down there a few times, but it's strange to go from freshwater fishing like bass, catfish, to go on to saltwater bay fishing, because the fish's mouth are different, the hook set's different. Even yeah. just the way you approach it with casting your bait, or, you know.
I mean, if you know how to reel in a reel, a rod and reel, you know how to fish. But the technique that it takes to go from, like you said, freshwater, saltwater seems like night and day.
Yeah, I mean, even according to Dylan, the angle of your hook set on the coast, like he said, you know, like a traditional bass hook set, which is kind of like a 3/4 angle,
yeah,
does not work. He said it does not work on these fish, and that may just be something that he thinks himself, but pretty much got to just set the hook straight up and down. And honestly, too, it seemed like because they were running at us, not away from us, you could almost just hook them just by reeling down hard. But so we're casting around this reef, floating these dead shrimp, and like Christian said earlier, we're pretty much wearing out the black drum. I think we caught 11 or 12.
Like, yeah, 11 or 12. Near, I mean, there's so many that we couldn't count because they just weren't keepers and whatnot.
Yeah.
Including redfish and trout and
yeah,
even ladyfish. I mean, we just use the ladyfish for bait, but...
Yeah, a ton of undersized drum.
I mean, I don't think we went 2 minutes without reeling at a fish, so that yeah. gives you any explanation. We were out there at that spot for, like, I would say at least 3 hours.
Yeah, and just constant fish. But kind of tying back into the, you know, maybe thinking that this time of year there's smaller, kind of not fry, but, you know, earlier stage fish, because a lot of the stuff was undersized. The drum, we caught a lot of kind of in between, not anything huge, like good yeah. eating size fish, but mm-hmm. nearly 3 limits worth, a handful of reds, some that were right there, you know, almost 20 inches, but, you know, we're not going to risk it.
Right. And then pretty much from there, we kind of went out and did something different that not a lot of people are familiar with. And this is one of the main reasons why we chose to go with the guy, Dylan, is he knew how to catch triple tail, which if you don't know what a triple tail is, I mean, you can imagine, you look at the color of a smallmouth and put it on a bluegill, but times it by, like, you know, up to 10 times, that's what they look like.
Yeah.
They're just a big armory. brownish colored fish. I mean, you can look up a picture of it and you can see what I'm talking about, but those things are freaking cool. And Richard can kind of go in with you and explain that, because he's the person that showed me on it, and that's his main reason of us going out there, just to catch him.
Yeah, so, and some of y'all listening probably do know this guide, and I haven't entered other than just saying his first name. The guide's Dylan Herring, and he's pretty well known for catching triple tail around the Rockport Corpus Bay. from what I understand, the triple tail, they're not a terribly common fish for that area. And even according to Dylan, you know, the better triple tail in Texas are caught around Matagorda. But yeah, from the research I've done, it seems like they're kind of even more prominent to the eastern coast, you know, Florida, maybe some around Alabama, yeah, Georgia.
It's kind of like one of those fish where if you see it, you got to catch it, because if you're not, you may not see it again.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're also only in the Gulf for a very short period of time during the year. During the summer months, late April through early October, they'll push up into the shallower bays of the Gulf and kind of sun. And they're a very interesting fish. They range sporadically in size. Some of them get up to, I've seen some caught on YouTube that were up to 32 pounds. And that's huge. But most, yeah, of them in Texas, I think, stay around, the big ones stay around that 15 to 20 pound mark. Mm-hmm. And that's what we were after. When I first got with Dylan, it was because, again, he catches those big triple tail. And I'd never even heard of a triple tail until I seen him post them. Like, man, that fish looks insane. They're huge. Just like Christian said, they're the closest thing that I think they look like is a actual, it's a fish that you'd put in a tank. They look like an Oscar to me, but if you put gar scales on an Oscar, they're just big, thick, robust fish. Look like they're super powerful, and supposedly great to eat. So you get a lot of meat off of one fish, something that puts up a really good fight. Like, apparently they're like the trophy of the bay in Texas if you can get on one. So that was why we wanted to go out after them. And I'll let Christian kind of talk about the process, not give away Dylan's secrets, but we're going to talk about, at least if you're in the bay, what to look for, and maybe try to catch some of these.
Yeah, so, I mean, we're pretty much, you got to look for structure when you're out there. If you don't find structure or something for that holds fish or bait fish, you're not going to find fish. You know, that's just pretty basic. Everybody knows that goes fishing. Sorry. But, yeah, I mean, we were riding around. I don't know how many miles we had driven from the last spot, maybe like 4 or 5 miles probably, going out more towards the area where we launched. And we were just looking at you know, these different floating structures, driving by them and looking. And every now and then, you know, typically it's, they like more of a grassy kind of mossy area, it seems like. Most of the ones that we had seen and caught, they were kind of sitting on some of those areas. But we just look and drive by them, and sure enough, you'd see the shadow of one just sitting there. And we backed the boat up, kind of leave the motor running so that way we didn't drift too close into them. And Dylan was very specific on the hook set on these, because, you know, once, if you don't set the hook, you don't catch them, don't hook into them, you'll scare them and they ain't coming back. So yeah, it's kind of a one-time deal. You got to make it right on the money, and if you don't, then you probably ain't going to catch them.
Yeah,
and he wanted to get us on him, and just as much as he wanted to get on himself, I mean, he was ready to catch him.
Yeah, and if you know Dylan, I think it was pretty awesome. If you don't know him, he might come off a little abrasive at times, because he is very
passionate,
passionate and focused on putting you on the fish.
Right.
And if it's a technique problem, he wants to teach you, but you're also, you know, at a certain point wasting his time if you're not adjusting. And that's being said, like, great guy. Just really, really takes it to his heart to get you on good fish.
Mm-hmm.
And, the thing with the triple tail, like I said, they're kind of like the prize of the bay down there, and you do not want to miss an opportunity on it. So we would pull up on these floating structures, like Christian said, and a characteristic of triple tail is they will sun on one side. They'll come up to the surface in the summer months, and they'll lay on their side and sun, one side facing up. And Dylan had told us, he's like, you know, when we're coming up on these structures, sometimes you'll see them 8 to 10 inches below the water. Sometimes they'll be right at the surface, and you can even see their tails and fin sticking out of the water. Yeah. And
luckily we got to see both of that.
Yeah,
both
we got, those. Yeah, we got to see both and catch them both ways too. And it was crazy because, you know, when he tells us this and we're zipping around these structures, me and Christian, we're on the front of the boat and we're like, man, there's no way we're going to see these fish. But sure enough, I mean, they're, when you look up a picture of them, I wish we had video for this, but I was an idiot and forgot our GoPro. But when you see these fish, you will understand they're very noticeable in the water. The hard part about it was when they would get up close to the grass, they almost blend in. I mean, they do blend in perfectly with the grass.
Especially that bay grass. It's kind of brown and dark.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you even mistake them for being the shadow of, you know, the structure you're looking at, because they just look like a dark blob.
Yeah.
Really.
But as far as catching them, we would pull on the side going out to the bay. So the current to our back, past the structure. So current coming into the structure, we would be on that side of specific hook set. And literally, you know, Dylan, this was all Dylan's doing. We would not have caught these fish without Dylan, 100%. Cast in behind the structure and put the, this was specific, live shrimp right in their face. I mean, it was honestly kind of like a master class of how to do it, because he would just put it right on the money every time. Mm-hmm. And you could literally see the triple tail swim out from the structure, and they would come up, and sometimes they'd smack the cork. Sometimes it would look like they smacked the cork, and then they would swim away. Well, what they would do, they come up, they hit the shrimp. I guess they hit it once, and then they just suck it in, and then they just kind of follow the cork. Yeah,
they kind of just go right back to where they came from. They kind of just grab it, swim back to where they were sitting before, and just sit there, and you wouldn't even know that they were hooked unless you felt the weight of them.
Yeah, they don't fight it at all. They just kind of go with it almost.
Yeah, but once you hook them, you know you did.
Yeah, once you are on them, they are all there. And Dylan, so he'd put it right in front of them. They would hit it a couple times, and he'd be really adamant about just letting him sit with it. Kind of like a yellow cat. You know, a yellow cat will kind of nibble. Well, these didn't nibble. They just hit it, sucked it in, and then, man, you reel down and just set the piss out of the hook. And once they're on, dude, it is a fight. I mean, and the ones we caught weren't even big. We caught one keeper. The other two were, I mean, well undersized. But the first one, Dylan hands me the rod, and again, it ran to us, but still, I mean, had the rod double bent over. I mean, just...
Yeah, when they see that boat, the bottom of the boat, they don't like it, and they try to get it.
Yeah.
They do everything they can to get away from it.
Yeah, we got that first one in the boat, and like I said, again, kind of a prize of the bay. I was pumped just to see one.
Yeah, so we just get to hold one, you know.
Yeah. We get it in the boat. We take some pictures, and Dylan's like, all right, let's go get another one. And he had kind of told us, you know, his best day for triple tail was on similar weather patterns. Apparently, they're pretty specific on their patterning as far as this weather. It was good for us, because if it was just hot and sunny every day, you know, you wouldn't really be able to get a pattern. But the water had cooled off, and now the sun broke finally after a few days of cloudy weather. So now these fish are pretty much forced to come in sun to kind of warm up. So I think it was literally the next structure we pull up to. Is either the next one or the second to next one.
Wasn't long after.
Yeah.
Probably 5 minutes after.
Yeah. And we found another. And I'll let Christian tell you about this one, because this is Christian's.
Yeah. So, you know, same deal. We just pull it to the structure. We see them. We try not to spook them. We go real slow, go upwind, you know, get ahead of the waves, put the boat in reverse, kind of try to steer it the best we can to keep in exact position. Dylan throws a shrimp out there. I don't know if it was mine or someone else's that he had hit it and ran off or swam off or something. I think that was maybe your dad's.
I think that was my dad's, yeah. Because I got kind of bummed.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's crazy. Like I said, he throws it kind of a little bit past them and then just reels it right up in front of their face. And you can't see the shrimp, obviously. You know, they're translucent. But you can see the fish, and you can see him swimming up and grabs the shrimp. Just sits there, kind of just, he's like, he's got it. I'm like, really? And he sets the hook. And sure enough, the drag starts streaming, and I'm sitting there like, oh, crap. He hands a rod to me, and, you know, pretty much it was on from there. We weren't even probably 20 foot from the buoy, so it's not like we had to put in a lot of line, but it took a lot of time to get them that 20 foot.
Yeah, probably a good minute, which we got this one on video, so we'll post that reel for y'all to check out.
Yeah, you'll be able to see them. I mean, I think that we got him up to the net a couple times, and, you know, he wasn't having none of that either.
Just
took it like
down.
Two or three swoops with the net to get him in. But once we got him in, he was all flared out and pissed off. And we got some good pictures of that one for sure. Got pictures of all of them, but I think that one kind of, he wanted his photo taken or something.
Because
he kind of was showing off. But either way, it was, you know, dang good time catching those triple tail. And, you know, same situation with Willie's fish. We each caught one. I mean, we caught three fish, three triple tail, sorry. And one of them ended up being a keeper, but they were all pretty close in size.
And so, too, another thing, you know, we were talking about that gar, and this is something because I caught one of each. I caught the gar, and then I caught this triple tail. The triple tail that I caught was maybe, what, 5 pounds, maybe?
Yeah, probably.
Probably not even. Compared to this gar that was about 40 pounds, that triple tail fought as hard, if not harder, than this 40-pound gar.
Yeah, they're just a tank, just a little tank.
Yeah, it's like a dinner plate with fins.
Mm-hmm.
And then, two, just to kind of explain the triple tail a little more, I mean, I have, like, a really good appreciation for them. Probably now my favorite bay fish, and going down there, I thought it would be, but now catching them probably is.
Yeah, because, I mean, from at least the explanation he made it out to be is that they weren't really a sought-after fish as far as to catch or even to eat, but we're going to try it pretty soon, but supposedly they're supposed to be the best tasting fish in the bay, and I'll take Dylan's word for it. He's been down there, you know, long enough to know.
Yeah. But
so I'm excited to try it too.
And another thing too is handling them. I mean, you can look at the pictures of them and they look kind of like a dinosaur. Like they're crazy looking. A
lot of spines.
Yeah. Which that's something you don't notice in the pictures. They have spines, kind of like a, not like a lionfish. They're not near as long, but like their dorsal fin at the top, they have spines that break the skin, and apparently their gill plates will cut the piss out of you. Dylan says most of the time taking pictures with them, somebody ends up getting cut. It's more headache trying to not get cut by them than it is to get the picture. Just crazy, crazy fish, crazy cool experience. And then like Christian said, we did round it out and got my dad one, which as y'all learn and hear from us, I'm all about getting my dad experiences that I think are interesting, something that I want to do. So being able to see my dad catch one, just right.
It's like,
I
mean, you know, growing up and they're teaching you things and then you get exposure to something new and then you kind of want to just return the favor. It just feels right.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, I would have rather my dad caught the first one, but he insisted that I catch the first one. But just seeing him, and also, like we said earlier, it's not a very common fish most people know about. Even my dad, until we went down there, he didn't even know about this fish, and he's fished in the bay a long time, a lot longer than, I mean, 30 years more than I have.
Right.
Not like I have much exposure, but he's fished a lot in the bay and never even heard of him. So that was pretty awesome, I thought.
Yeah, and, I mean, our day still wasn't even over at that point. We went to one of Dylan's private little middens that he had found, that he knew a guy that had it, and we went and kind of looked around on his spot. It was his buddy's place that he had owned, that we went over there and kind of looked around on it for a little bit.
Yeah, so got into some arrowheads down there too. Pretty cool. You know, coastal stuff is very different. You come from the hill country where, and even central Texas, where, you know, black dirt, middens, solid shell, you know, snails, tons of flint, tons of bone, fire rock out the butt, versus down there on these coastal plains, you look across it and you're like, man, where would you even camp down here? But any of these little creek inlets, there's these huge, huge shell middens. And once you see them, they're unmistakable. The first time one was pointed out to me, the last time I was down there, it was me and buddy Nathan, which you'll hear from on here eventually. You see these middens from, I mean, you can see them from a quarter mile away once you know what you're looking at, and they're huge. But yeah, we got access to a private one, and we pull up on it, and I mean, we're a good, what, 200 yards from it, coming up on it.
Yeah, you can just see it from out there. You know exactly what you're pulling up on.
Yeah, just, I mean, mounded up shell, probably 4 foot tall, just pouring out of the ground. And we'd kind of seen some of the stuff that'd come out of there, some really killer perdis, bonhams. So we pull up, and again, just shell out the wazoo. Christian and I go left, my dad and the other guy, they go to the right and start kind of looking, and not really seeing nothing on this left side. We were kind of on the edge of it. I mean, just a ton of shell, but not any flint or anything that just really sticking out. But we turn around and kind of start working back, and then everything starts kind of start seeing a little bit of flint, not a ton of flint down there, because the material is just not as common. All that stuff is kind of brought in, from my understanding. Mm-hmm.
Some pottery.
Yeah, tons of pottery. I mean, more pottery than you could have wanted to carry home. I kept one piece out of all of it that I found just because it had some squiggly lines painted on it, and it was a rim piece. Christian found a handful of it, which is cool because, you know, first time Christian's got to, I think, see pottery, yeah?
Yeah, I think that was probably my first time getting my hands on a piece. Like, I'd seen pictures, and, you know, I think Richard has a few pieces, a few artifacts like that, but getting to see it myself was a different, you know, just kind of like, it doesn't seem real. It doesn't seem like what it is unless you know what it is.
Yeah.
I probably walked over that, you know, maybe in my lifetime and never even noticed to look down and see, hey, that's a piece of pottery, you know. It's just not something you think about every day when you have no exposure to it.
Yeah. Yeah, and then another really nice piece was picked up with some, like a knobby rimmed piece, solid black with some etch work in it. Really pretty piece. We didn't find any points, but the way the tide was rolling, it kind of had a more of the sand pushed up over the washout than what would have been ideal to find points in, from my understanding.
Yeah, I think he explained it kind of needed more of a north wind, kind of more in the winter months is when they get a washout in that specific area.
Yeah, but after that, you know, we poked around there for a little bit trying to find them. Found a piece of Spanish glass, which I didn't even know what Spanish glass was until yesterday.
Right.
I mean, other than just assumption, but I didn't know what it looked like. So we got to see that. That was really cool. And then got a little bit more information about this exact site. There's been some musket balls found, some other Spanish pieces. Mm-hmm. A steel trade point's been found at this exact spot.
Yeah, freaking
crazy. Cool. Yeah. Cool. And for a trade point to make it on the coast, if you don't know what a trade point is, if you're listening and don't know what that is, so the later cultures, the Mississippian people, which are the bird point culture, essentially the most recent Indians.
Right.
When the Spanish got here and when the Europeans got here, the Indians would acquire materials from either or, whether it be metal or glass, whatever, and they would make points out of it. And what a trade point is it's a steel arrowhead made by an Indian. And to survive in the coastal region is pretty crazy, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, you can't even keep a car for over 20 years in the coast of Texas. But for some reason, I guess, you know, a trade point will last however many, you know, hundreds of thousands of years it's been there.
Yeah, point was probably made in the 1600s. And to survive on the coast that long, I mean, it was found within the last year. That's crazy. One of the few that I've actually seen in a personal collection, even, and one of the coolest things I've seen in a personal collection. So we got to explore that site a little bit. Then we loaded up and headed back in. Went and got some food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that we had eaten breakfast that morning, and we were about dang near run ragged by the end of the day. We were hungry, burnt. I think Richard got probably some sort of degree sunburn on. He's probably gonna have blisters, but either way, we went and got something to eat, and then after that, I think we met up with Dylan at his house, and he kind of just showed us his way of cleaning his fish. I mean, he filleted most of them, but you can do it on the half shell too on some of those. From my understanding, you can bake it, you know, still with the skin on it as you would like a salmon. And I think that you had a recipe or something that you said you did last time he was there or something
Yeah, so the last time I was there, and I'm sure it'll be good with these drum, but on redfish, there's two ways I made them on the half shell. And basically allows you to grill them. That skin kind of protects the bottom side. But I grilled some that had lemon, some rosemary on them, salt, pepper. That was really about it. But then one way that his dad showed me actually last time we were down there is you take cream cheese and you put it on top of them and then you wrap them with a little bit of Tony's and a little bit of, I believe it was Holy Cow seasoning, and oh my gosh, is it good. Can't beat it. So he cleaned up the fish for us, and then we got to look at a little bit more arrowheads.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy has some insane coastal pieces. If you're familiar with coastal arrowheads, it seems to be a lot of Mississippian culture that I've ever seen come out of there. So, you know, more recent bird point type cultures. But I do know there's a prominent Darl culture down there, a lot of really nice corner tangs. And I mean, it stretches back to paleo, but it seems like the bulk of what's found down there is more bird point types that I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
And his bird point collection is extensive and some just straight up killers. A lot of black flint, kind of, I don't think it's Owl Creek. It's probably Brushy Creek type material. Tons of Perdis and Bonhams made out of that.
Yeah, a lot of real pretty flint for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of root beer Perdis, Fresnos. He had a Fresno made out of some Georgetown blue that had patinated in the sun. Just beautiful white speckled Fresno. And bird points of just smaller than your thumbnail to 2.5 inch Perdis and Bonhams and Scallions and just crazy, crazy birdies.
Mm-hmm.
And with his permission, we might post some of that footage that we took of those pieces, some of those pictures, just some insane pieces. But that about wrapped up the day. We kind of sat there, hung out with him a little bit, kind of planned some future stuff. And
some potential duck hunting.
Yeah, some duck hunting, maybe some flounder fish, gigging, not fishing, gigging.
Mm-hmm.
Some mangrove fishing. Dylan does it all. And if y'all want to book a trip with him, just look him up. Dylan Herring, he's on Facebook. Guide Specs, Reds.
Dylan with an I.
Yeah, Dylan with an I. Black Drum, Mangrove Snapper. He'll even get you on Shark and clearly Triple Tail.
Yeah.
The Triple Tail is the highlight of the whole deal, I think. But great guy, great guide service. And, you know, I'll let Christian, like we talked about, you kind of heard the day, but kind of explain what these guides actually do for you as a customer to make sure that you're successful in your trip.
Yeah, so I mean, it's not really something that you think about as a customer, what their day looks like. You're just thinking about what you're going to do. You're thinking about how you're going to catch all these fish and just hoping and praying you are and whatnot. But these guys are, you know, typically every single day, I mean, they're washing their boat, getting bait, getting up early. Sometimes it's 12, 13-hour days. Sometimes even longer. It just depends on what time of the year it is.
Yeah, yesterday.
I mean, in the summer year, it's, I think he had got up at, you know, what, 5:30 in the morning and didn't probably go to sleep, who knows, till maybe 10 o'clock. So.
Yeah, nearly a 12-hour day. I mean, at least a 12-hour day yesterday. He was up at 5:30 and we fished through 5:30. I know that.
Yeah, but just the amount of preparation it takes for every single day, the amount of effort, I mean, it wears you out, and that's just something that not a lot of people really kind of notice or take, you know, kind of take advantage of it most of the time. So, you know, if you're on a guided trip and you're with a guide, make sure you tip them, because most of the money that you're giving them for the trip itself isn't all being taken in and not making a bunch off of it. At the end of the day, the profit isn't really as high as you think it might be.
Yeah, by the time they pay for fuel,
you know, tackle, bait, fuel,
yep,
and just overall, you know, health, you know,
yeah, like, yeah,
you're beating yourself ragged every day. It's gonna catch up eventually.
Yeah, yeah, they do a lot of work that goes unnoticed. A lot like, you know, stuff we talked with Mike and Quade too.
Yeah, on digging and stuff
with these dig sites, private sites like that. Those guys that are letting you come in and use their resources and you know, whether that be arrowheads or, you know, the Texas wildlife, even whether it be fish, ducks, whatever, these guides work their tails off. Even the hours that you don't account for, just the days that you're there, the days they spend in scouting and finding mm-hmm. these places to take you to, getting the access, you know, that's something I'll harp as we go through this is, you know, appreciate the people that stick their neck out for you and let you do things. Mm-hmm. And that's not saying that there's not going to be some shady people out there that you run into or some bad trips. Right.
But when you find the good ones, you got to hang on to them for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, kind of tying back into what we said the last podcast too, you know, you can't go out there and expect to just kill it every time on everything mm-hmm. you do. Some people have that luck, but not everybody. And
typically, you know,
yeah.
Typically people that don't deserve it typically get it, but you know, that's just how it goes in anything.
Yeah. Just appreciate the opportunities people give y'all. Even if it doesn't go your way, it doesn't mean that they didn't try. They didn't put in the effort to get you there, but this wasn't one of those experiences. We had a great time. This, this go around. I had a great time the last time I was down there with him too. Dylan does a great job putting you on fish, does everything he can. And like I said, he's very passionate about it. I mean,
just overall, it was a good time. Weather turned out to be perfect for us. A lot of memories to be made later on down the, or a lot of memories that have been made that we'll remember later down the road.
Yeah.
You know, throughout, I think everybody had a good time, and we'll probably still be talking about it tomorrow, you know, and beyond that, obviously.
Yeah, we went, it's crazy to think, you know, we went into this week looking at it like we may not even be fishing this weekend to just the absolute, probably perfect weather you could ask for, middle of July, not even breaking a sweat out on the boat.
Yeah.
The only downfall is we got sunburnt because we expected it to be cloudy and no one put raining. On sunblock. cloudy and raining.
We got sunburnt with a little bit of salt in our face. So, you know, we felt it for sure. And a little bit of windburn on top of that. We kind of got a little bit ginger skinned over here. So typically doesn't do well in that environment.
Yeah. But overall, man, just a great trip. It's a good time getting to spend it with our buddy, my buddy and my dad. Getting to see Dylan again. Dylan's a good buddy of mine, I would say, and just great time.
Yeah. Like I said, that pretty much wraps it up, guys. Make sure that you follow us on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook group. It's at Native Ways Podcast on all three of those social medias. And we'll see you on the next one. Make sure you keep living your hobbies.
Yeah. Like Christian said, too, subscribe now that we are up and live with y'all. We'll be posting. We're going to try to bring y'all a new episode every 2 weeks. The goal is to have 2 episodes per month. And like, again, whether that be digging, fishing, hunting, whatever it is, we just want y'all to keep living y'all's hobby. And we'll see y'all later.
All right. Later.
Boom.